evening, the chapter tonight has to do with the relationship of teacher and student and is titled, They Shall All Be Taught of God. And that includes the teacher and the student as well. When you were looking for a way to bring you into spiritual consciousness, the thought probably crossed your mind, who in this world would be the best qualified person for me to seek out? And then you narrowed it down to who is the best qualified person to seek out near you. Now, the peculiar thing about finding a teacher is that when you have sought out a human teacher, you still have not found your teacher. And when you have found a human teacher, you are really seeking the spiritual nature of that human teacher. And although you may originally have had a thought that there will be a person, a very wise person, who could give you those eternal words of wisdom, you find as you go along that the purpose which is fulfilled by your human teacher is quite different than you had suspected. Your human teacher has to be even wiser than you wanted that teacher to be, to the extent that he or she is so wise that he or she knows that he is not the teacher at all. And finally, your teacher has to know how to disappear and open instead in you your capacity to meet, find, receive, commune with your real teacher. Now you know all about the strength you feel at certain times, the intelligence that at times seems to soar above the normal. And though you may not have suspected the source of it, it often comes from your real teacher. That inner self, so silent, so impersonal, so unknown to the outer being, that even when it brings you an impartation or a revelation, it never reveals its own identity as the source. And yet it is ever there, ever watchful, ever waiting for one of your petals to open, so that that little tight rosebud Joel speaks of eventually begins to move. And just the slightest tincture of light begins to express, and one of the petals of your being begins to open. Ultimately, every petal will, and then will come in full bloom the teacher within, the real teacher, the teacher that is opened up to you by your human teacher, so that inside yourself you find that which man has been seeking for millennium after millennium, the presence of God. Now the words, the thoughts, the books, the tapes, all these are the little markers along the way But the great opening, the great experience, even if it's a word, must be your realization that the God I was seeking and the God that I often denied, I am finding in the midst of me. There's no other place. If I don't find this God in the midst of me, I live in a godless universe, no matter how deeply I may believe in a God. There must be an inner contact before God becomes an experience and a reality and the bearer of fruit. Now we're in a room, and the room is in your consciousness. Therefore, you might say, my consciousness must certainly be larger than the room. Your body is in your consciousness, and your consciousness must be larger than your body. This world is in your consciousness, and your consciousness must be larger than this world. But where is your consciousness? Are you living inside of the body, which is in the consciousness? Or are you living in the consciousness and out of it? Your teacher must take you from a little point living inside a body, seeing the world from that little point inside that body, and be such a transparency that ultimately you are raised up from a point living inside of a body to a realization that because my body is in my consciousness, and I am aware of my body, I must be conscious of that which is my body, or I wouldn't know I had one. I must be conscious of this room, or I wouldn't know there is a room. I must be conscious of this world, or I wouldn't know there is a world. Now, why don't I try living as that consciousness instead of a point inside of a body? Why don't I begin to give that consciousness a chance to be the sole factor which is and guides and nourishes that which I call life? Why don't I take the authority out of that point in the midst of a body, which looks at infinity and interprets it into a world of good and evil? And so I begin to surrender. I make a surrender from the natural tendency to listen to that point within the body which says run or jump or hate, and I do not respond to it, but instead I rest on a different level of awareness, not in a point, not in a place, not in a time, but really letting myself be a consciousness which is not confined to a point, to a place, to a room, to a time, to a day, to an age, to a body. A consciousness which has no boundary, which is divine, which says before Jesus was, I existed. Before Abraham was, I existed. Before Moses was, I existed. And I exist now as that consciousness before there was a beginning of the word time, before there was a brain to speak the word God. I exist now as that consciousness which is the only one. That consciousness I am. And there I rest to feel the presence of my own being. Not as a physical form, not as an entity with density, or with any specific size or shape or weight, this is the Christ mind, consciousness. My name is quite different than the name man has given me. I have no name. If you were the only person in this world, would you bother to give yourself a name? I am nameless, for I am the only being, the one consciousness. Men may call me God, but it is not what I call myself. Now, as you accept yourself to be consciousness, you must go forth into all that has seemed to have been and see that you are there now. There is no time that has been where you do not exist now, this moment. Where Jesus walked, you exist now as consciousness. For there is only one consciousness. All life exists now. There will never be new life. Whoever has lived exists now. And all life being one, I am the life that is the life of all who have ever walked this earth, and even of those still unborn. I am the one spiritual self, the one divine consciousness. I can be no other, for there is no other. My name is I. To let this I supersede all beliefs that you have about yourself. To drop every sense of belief that you have ever possessed. To permit I, consciousness, to be your only self. To let the mind, which would try to understand consciousness, drop its beliefs and its desire to understand, to permit no duality of any nature, to rest in I. And to know that I am the life of a stone. I am the life of a tree. I am the life of a flower. I am all life wherever it is. And I am the same life everywhere. To be taught of God is to accept that God is all. For you can never be taught by the God you dismember into pieces, by the God you deny as the allness, the one. And this is the major prerequisite, that every thought, every human belief, every concept, every belief in a personal me, in a personal life, in a personal possession, in a personal talent, all such beliefs must vanish. There must be no me there to receive from the Father who is the teacher. And if me goes not away, the Comforter cannot come unto you. As long as there is a personal I who will not go away, you cannot receive the descent of the Holy Ghost. Only two, that consciousness which is surrendering itself in total devotion to the Spirit, can the Holy Ghost descend. There is no room in a human mind for the presence of God. Now, as you came through the writings of Joel, you spoke of God as divine mind at one place, along 52 or 53, there was confusion. There were some people who thought divine mind was the human mind. I may have told you about one woman who had migraine so intense that the mere word pain brought pain to her. If she heard the word pain, she doubled up with migraine. And it was so ludicrous that if she saw the word paint, she saw the word pain before she saw the T in paint. And so she had to hide when she sat in her husband's car and they rode through town. She might see a billboard that said Glidden's paint or some other company's paint. And all she would see was that word pain. But she had a very, very strong background in Christian Science in her case. And she was convinced that her mind was divine. While she was feeling intense pain through a migraine, nothing could convince her that the mind of God wouldn't have a migraine. There were other complications with the use of the word mind. We have preconcepts about it because it's a familiar word. Consciousness was not quite so familiar. And whereas mind had a finite concept to us, consciousness seemed to have overtones. You couldn't pin it down. It seemed to suggest the infinite mansions. And ultimately, the word consciousness then took the place of mind in Joel's work. Not that the meaning was any different. Mind and consciousness, when they're applied to the divine self, are identical. but it's the connotations that human beings bring with these words and to these words that he had tried to obviate by that change. Now, consciousness, or if you prefer at this point, if you can say divine mind without concepts, and know that divine mind is your mind, but that precludes the possibility of your human mind being a divine mind. Then you might say mind. But consciousness will often lift you, the I consciousness. You can, with those two words and a respect for them, and the finger of spirit working within you, you can place yourself now throughout eternity and throughout infinity, and ultimately we will all do that, and we will accept ourselves to be everywhere in eternity and infinity now. In other words, there is not a single tomorrow that you are not already in this moment. There is not a single place where life will express ever that you are not already in this moment. And this falls into place. It seems to find a groove within you. It's like your own thought. If you tried to watch your thought, you couldn't watch it. It escapes analysis that closely because it is an intangible. But there it is. Suddenly it appears you have a thought. You're not conscious of having manufactured one. It just seems to fall into place from nowhere. And so it is in your spiritual progress. These new levels of consciousness slide in from nowhere. And suddenly there is in you a vertical strength, and it's calling itself I, and you don't know where it came from. It says, I am. And for that moment, you are in eternity. You are in infinity, and they are you. Now, at that point, the word dominion takes a new scope. It's something that cannot be explained without the fear that somehow you'll be listening with a human mind and thus lose the delicacy of the explanation. But let us see. You're told that on such and such a date you must appear for an operation. We'll place it 20 days ahead. You're told what the problem is, where you must be, and the time. Your human mind starts making preparations. The work you must do before you leave for that operation. All the details of what must be completed so that you can go there and have it done. But now let's take you, not as a human mind, not as a point functioning out of a body, but let's take you as pure consciousness when this diagnosis comes to you. And let's be absolute, because in the I, you'll find you can't be anything else. Now, I, consciousness, am all there is. And why will I be operated upon? And how can I be operated upon in the future when I am eternal self? I am not a tomorrow, I am a now. I am this moment. And this moment is eternal. And there is never going to be another one. This eternal moment is the eternal now. I have no date. There is no place. There is no space. There is no time. Now, to a human mind, this is incomprehensible. To the I consciousness, this is the only way it is. There is no time and place in which such an operation can take place, and there is no substance on which it can take place. And when you are living in this I consciousness, this is your realization. Now, whatever belief is in you is going to externalize eventually into some physical, visible activity. And if in your human mind you have the belief in future time and in a place where an operation can take place and in a condition that may require such an operation, you may be sure the potential of that place, time, and space, an operation taking place, is definite and will externalize. But if you're living in an I consciousness, there can be no such belief in you. And this is the point. When there is no such belief in you, you are the pure at heart. You are the Christ mind. You are the divine consciousness. And that which is not a belief in you has no way of externalizing as your experience. You could no longer, no more get Jesus the Christ to appear on a certain date, at a certain time, at a certain place for an operation than you could have prevented his resurrection. There was no consciousness of a time and a place and a date within to externalize in the without. Now, this can fall on ears that hear not. And it can fall on a spiritual consciousness that says, I understand. And the dominion does not lie in your willpower. It lies in the dedicated effort you have put forth through your working with truth and your working with meditation to reach that point in consciousness where this particular level begins to form in you and establishes its own dominion in you, its own I-ness in you. And then, whereas the shadow of human diagnosis, of human fear, of human belief may have been there, the sunshine of I takes the place of the shadow. And what seemed very real to the human mind is totally unknown to the I mind. And when the I mind is your consciousness, then no longer is the belief of the human mind your consciousness. They do not coexist. Never is there shade and sunshine in the same place at the same time. There may be shade in a place one time and sunshine in that place, but at another time. When the sunshine is there, the shade is not. When the sunshine is gone, the shade is there. When your mind is entertaining human belief, it is because the God realization is not there. When the God realization is there, there is no human belief there. They cannot coexist in the same place at the same time. When you have the God realization, the human belief being absent, the human experience does not take place. Now, the only reason there's a human body present is because there's a human consciousness. And all of our work will be to remove that human consciousness. When the human consciousness is gone, there cannot be a human body present. Even when there appears to be one. I, consciousness, am yourself, and I am your teacher, and you shall all be taught of me. And when you are taught of I, then the teaching has power. Then what you are taught is coordinated into a progressive unfolding plan. When you are taught not of I, but by human words, human thoughts, human beliefs, then all that you are being taught is only a preparation for the beginning of your real teaching. And so we find that every question, though necessary in certain phases of this work, every question eventually diminishes into no questions. And when the stage of no questions begins, then we're in the first beginning of the teaching. As long as the questions are continued, there is still a human mind that wants to be fed, and not a soul waiting to express. And so this feeding of the human mind continues for quite a while. And then one day the student says, something strange happened. I awakened, and for the first time, for the very first time in my whole study, I heard the word. One word, just one, that's all I heard. It was the briefest second, but it said comforter. And it really was a great comfort to hear that word, because I felt warm inside. And that's all it said to me. And this is a story a person told me recently. After 17 lessons, this was the first glimmering of an inner spark. Now in others, it could take longer, and in others, it happened long before they ever came to seek instruction. But this beginning of the opening of the rosebud, or the lotus in Oriental teaching, the spark from within, is the complete turning from human consciousness and the introduction, the first curtain call, the first fanfare. This is the overture, just beginning now, and the great works are right behind those curtains, waiting to part. Now, as we have private students, we find the teaching takes a different turn than it does in classwork. The level of the student dictates that, so that there truly are classes with individuals when there is nothing to say. In fact, the words seem like an intrusion. The student has reached the point where they know they're in a knower. There is an inner fountain and it's flowing. And in the quiet, there is a mutual acceptance, I am, on the part of teacher, on the part of student. And that's all there is to start with. I am. And in this I am oneness, contact is made. And the spirit responds and flows and moves through both student and teacher, not in any way directed by either of them. There is no mental work. There is no effort of any kind. There is the absolute opposite of effort, the opposite of mentality. There is naught but the quiet realization of the one consciousness present everywhere. And it makes its own impartations, so that teacher and student may have slightly different impartations, eventually crossing on one point or another. And then if, for some reason they wish to, they may discuss what occurred. But always, this is the way in which the final, the real, comes into your experience. And this is the way you ultimately find your freedom. Because when the comforter within you announces itself, and you find you can come to this comforter almost at will, then the day of freedom announces itself. And now you're ready to take others the same route that you have traveled. Because they shall all be taught of God, it is quite clear that this form of freedom is inevitable to you and you and you. But it is important to be patient, because that type of freedom cannot come prematurely. It is necessary for each of us to slowly come into the understanding of the full nature of God. And we cannot do that if we have a premature realization of self. The very nature of realization comes after spiritual manhood, not before. And because there are many facets of God, of self, of spirit, to be learned, none of us can really look forward to an illumination like Paul at Damascus. Very few are privileged, if it is a privilege, to be enlightened without a human teacher. Paul had a human teacher, but not a spiritual teacher. He had a religious teacher without any spiritual background. spiritual breakthrough came for quite different reasons than are apparent to the eye. But it is quite clear that he had much previous training in previous incarnations. And this was the final opening of the lotus or the rosebud, equipping him through illumination to understand the message of Jesus as well as anyone on earth at that time, with the very, very remote possible exception of John. Now, Paul didn't have to go to a human teacher for that, but he must have gone to human teachers in previous incarnations. He credited his illumination to no one. John later credited his illumination to Jesus Christ, not to the Spirit itself, but to Jesus Christ. And this was a distinction because you too can be taught by Jesus Christ, or you could be taught by Paul, or you could be taught by John, or you could be taught directly by the Spirit without going through John, Paul, or Jesus. In other words, you can have a direct source as your teacher or a mediator, and that mediator could be a human being on this side of the veil, or one who no longer is a human being but once was, such as John, Paul, Peter. The point is that all life is now, and those who have lived obviously are living, if we have accepted deathlessness as the truth. Now, it would be rather shallow to think there is God as we know God in this work, and also to think that death is a possibility. God being the only, who's going to die? And so we have accepted deathlessness, and having accepted deathlessness, you reach that point then when you know that whoever appeared and became illumined and then disappeared from form, if that were a true spiritual illumination, then the disappearance was transition. And that individual is now alive and is now functioning as a living spirit within the consciousness that is divine and is infinite. And therefore, all that is within that infinite consciousness being alive, it is as present now as it was in form, and therefore available to you right here and right now. It was Joel who said that he would be present for his students on both sides of the veil. And he said, if students only knew that it makes no difference if there's a physical form there or not, they would rest in the realization that their teacher can never leave them. Well then, you have a teacher. And your teacher may be in the visible, and your teacher may be in the invisible. But you have never been without a teacher. And although your teacher may not have revealed whether he is man or she is woman, be sure your teacher can never leave you or forsake you. And be sure, too, that you can learn through that teacher, through the conscious awareness that you have one. And then whatever you receive in the way of an impartation, even if it comes to you from that invisible teacher, it will be coming from the one source, for there is no other source, whether it comes directly to you or through your invisible mediator. Always the one source is the only source. And some have the consciousness which permits them to rest in the knowledge that I must be that one source, for I and the Father are one. Jesus rested in that knowledge that I and the Father are one, and therefore he learned directly from source. But never think that he didn't learn from Moses and Elias. Never think that he traveled alone. Be sure and know that as they traveled with him in the invisible, as shown in the Transfiguration when they appeared, so invisible to you, your teacher stands now. Know that because your conscious awareness of it is vital. Your teacher stands there now and forever, and may someday bring you another teacher. When you have passed the level of that particular ordination which your teacher has on your behalf. Now, the more you're thinking of yourself as human being, the more you are turning away from the invisible teachers who surround you. Now let us take into realization that the one consciousness is that which fed Moses, fed Elias, fed Jesus, fed John, fed Paul, and is feeding you. And that one consciousness is the source of all life and all intelligence. And is omnipresent where you stand. Can you feel the depth of your being? Not as a three-pointed creature, but a depth, so that your being begins to show you it has no place where it ends or begins. Can you see the possibilities of a new consciousness that opens you up to see a stone a different way, a tree a different way, a flower a different way? Joel has three kinds of stones he talks about. Just a stone, a regular material stone. And that's all it is, it's a stone, that's one kind. But as soon as your mind starts to work with that, you have a mental stone. And you think of throwing it somewhere. And if you're a child, you think of it as a weapon. And then when you think beyond human thought, when you have a spiritual stone, you have something you don't know about as a material stone or a mental stone. A spiritual stone is a jewel. You remember all those jewels in the final book of Revelation? In the city that lieth fourth square, where the foundations are made of different jewels. That's because there is spiritual vision there. And spiritual vision doesn't see a material stone anymore. It sees nothing with corporeality, with density. Spiritual vision sees that stone in different colors, in a different form, a different structure, but without density. Spiritual vision sees the tree without density, the earth without density, the ocean without density, the human form without density. And yet it has form and it has structure and it has color. We are asked to surrender the finite beliefs of the human mind if we wish to experience the presence of God. And to the degree that you find a willingness to surrender your human beliefs, the light begins to glimmer. But you can see if you're saying, let him show me, let God prove it, you're the one who will be left in the human consciousness. There is no need for God to prove anything to God. And God cannot acknowledge that which is not God. Now, if we were able to stand here for another half hour in total silence, you at this moment have no way of knowing what would happen. That is the kind of instruction each of us will learn to have, in which we will stand in silence before the Spirit, accepting ourselves as pure consciousness and letting the law of Spirit unfold itself with no human thought or belief or mind there to in any way make a suggestion or enter into that experience. There will be a complete self-effacement. In this, you may find yourself quite different than a human form. You may find yourself experiencing things that a human form cannot experience. You may finally realize that there is no life in a human body. Everything that shows forth in the human body as life is the mental activity of the human mind. Life never is a visible anything. Life is always invisible to human mind. This life that you are, being infinite, has ever been alive and will always be life and has never been other than life. There must come to you a moment of knowing that, for in that moment you will see the non-life of that which, to human sense, can die. Nothing that could die could ever have been life. Only life is life, and life is never less than itself. We begin to drop all belief in being something that we never were or could be. And whereas at first the acceptance of yourself as life without opposite is ridiculous to your human mind, you're eventually going to drop the belief that that human mind is your mind. You're going to come to Paul's great revelation that the human mind is but the agent of the God of this world. That the God of this world is responsible for your belief that you have a human mind, is responsible for your self-will, is responsible for your belief that there is a life that you call your human body. We're going to see that Paul's great revelation, which has never been taught to the world at large, is the only truth that can be taught about God, because until it is taught, the true presence of God in you can never be comprehended. And you cannot be taught of God, of Spirit, to open the petals of your own living soul until you have overcome the belief that the human mind is a God-ordained faculty. As long as there is the belief that the human mind is a reality, the inner teaching is lost. That is why it has been lost to the great intellects of our world. Even those whose intellects far exceed our own. Have been unable to find the Spirit of God because the intellect must always feed upon the God of this world. It can even deny the presence of a God, but it will feed upon what Paul called the God of this world, and that is cosmic thought. Universal thought is the substance upon which the intellect feeds, always under the belief that it is exploring new channels, breaking out into new great areas, but it's always within the confines of this world. And this world is the husk, the shell. This world is the prop, the stage play. There must come your breakthrough, in which you are able to relax from that human mind's activity, because it is on one channel, and that channel is world thought, world hypnosis, and it is not aware of it. It's only in a blinding flash that you can become aware of that world hypnosis. When that flash came to Paul, he was out of the channel of world thought. Until then, he was not aware that the channel of world thought is a false channel. He was not aware that there is a universe other than the one which the human eye knows and sees.